Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with the ruling today issued by the Commissioner of the NBA, Adam Silver, banning Donald Sterling for life from any association with the team he owns, the LA Clippers, fining him $2.5 million and moving to have a three-quarters majority of the NBA team owners force him to sell the Clippers. All this on the eve of an important playoff game for the embattled team. Andrei Markovits, a professor of comparative politics at the University of Michigan and author of Gaming the World, How Sports Are Reshaping Global Politics and Culture, and Sportista, Female Fandom in the United States, joins us to discuss today's punishment of a racist billionaire slumlord team owner by his peers. Then we'll discuss the public shaming of Donald Sterling further with Andre Gillespie, a professor of political science at Emory University and the author of The New Black Politician, Cory Booker, Newark, and Post-Racial America. We'll discuss attempts by the right-wing press to label Sterling a Democrat, even though he's a registered Republican, and examine why, only weeks after Sterling's racist rant was made public, African-American leaders like the Reverend Al Sharpton and the NAACP were about to host an awards dinner honoring Donald Sterling with a Lifetime Achievement Award. Then finally, we'll assess the arguments before the Supreme Court in an important Fourth Amendment case with far-reaching consequences for privacy in the digital age. Mark Rotenberg, the president and executive director of the Electronic Privacy Information Center, EPIC, in Washington, D.C., who was in the Supreme Court today, joins us to discuss how the court might rule on police powers in searching a potential crime scene where they have access to a trove of personal and private data, your cell phone. And joining us now is Andrei Markovits, who's a professor of comparative politics at the University of Michigan. His books include Uncouth Nation, Why Europe Dislikes America, Offside, Soccer and American Exceptionalism, and Gaming the World, How Sports Are Reshaping Global Politics and Culture. His latest book is Sportista, Female Fandom in the United States. Welcome to Background Briefing, Andrei Markovits.
Thank you so much for having me.
And the press conference today with the NBA Commissioner, Adam Silver, I actually, just to give you my personal take on it, Andre, and I'm interested in yours, of course, I was very impressed with Adam Silver. I've watched a lot of press conferences, and this guy was the sharpest, the most concise, the most on point that I've heard for a long time.
Well, I could not agree more with you. I've not attended as many press conferences as you have, so I can't have sort of, other than watching a lot of them on television, I actually was not only impressed by what he said, but how he said it, and he clearly, he was really moved by this. I had the impression that this got to his core, and he reacted, he saw this ultimately as an absolute necessity, that there was no way to compromise, that he had to bring, all the possibilities that he had to bear to really purge this unacceptable entity in the NBA. This was really a sort of kind of it was like a purge. It was really that this is, you had to cut the body out, or this was really a cancer that simply just could not be in some ways sort of negotiated, or that's what was going on here.
So having written about how Uncouth Nation, why Europe...
Wait, please, be very careful, because it's about Europe's hideous anti-Americanism.
I understand. Being a little facetious, but I mean, yeah. My sense is that this is actually a great moment for America, because it really shows that the majority of Americans are decent and abhor this kind of language and this kind of attitude, whether it's in private or in public. I mean, the moral suasion that's happening here is pretty profound.
Yeah, I mean, I've spent a good deal of my last 20 years berating Europeans about their hideous anti-Americanism. That's what Uncouth Nation is about. That to Europeans, Americans are simply uncouth, and it's damned if you do, damned if you don't. I would not see it in that context, really, other than that, especially in sports and especially in hegemonic sports, meaning those very few sports that are major public culture, meaning literally three or four games played by ball-like contraptions. So not the Olympic sports, but sports that people follow. The United States actually has had a much more progressive stand than Europe. I mean, you addressed Gaming the World, where in fact there's a whole chapter how in Europe, soccer world, the counter-cosmopolitanism, racism, the most hideous expressions of anti-Semitism, whatever, are actually par for the course. And that actually, in this case, the United States, or especially, by the way, the NBA, simply is miles ahead and had to be. And so which is not to say, by the way, that there is no racism in American sports and that there's not ugly forms above all of homophobia and all this stuff. After all, these are, entities that are owned by men, are played by men, are on and on, in which, of course, clearly partisanship is very important, and the whole idea about partisanship is to get into your opponent's head, and then it becomes really a matter of degree whether you can call someone an ugly bastard or whatever, that is acceptable, or you add a racial epithet, or you actually invoke Auschwitz. So that's really a slippery slope. But in the United States, for reasons which, of course, have everything to do with its history, in the last 30 or years or so, racism has become an absolute no-no. Not other forms of counter-cosmopolitanism, but racism has become a no-no. You cannot do that. I've gone to thousands of American sporting events and European events, but I have never heard at an American event. I've heard some very nasty things, but I've never, ever heard someone really berate a player with the N-word or in any racial way. You just don't. And this is absolutely common on all Europe's football grounds. So this is a difference, and yes, I think to come back to your earlier point, I'm not sure one should be really, patting one's shoulders on here or back of being sort of so virtuous, but I really think Silver did an amazing job. I must say I was really impressed, because I actually had thought that he would ban him indefinitely rather than come down with a death penalty, and which he did, and I was just dumbfounded. And what was so amazing is that how the tweets were coming out on the screen, and how the greats like Magic Johnson and so on really completely, and Shannon Sharp, the football player, famous tight end, Hall of Famer, and all of these guys just completely backed him. So a major victory for Alan Silver was one of my great professors at Columbia. Adam Silver, and this is a good day. I think it's a good day.
Again, I'm speaking with Andrei Markovits, who's a professor of comparative politics at the University of Michigan, and his books include Uncouth Nation, Why Europe Dislikes America, Offside, Soccer and American Exceptionalism, and his latest, Gaming the World, How Sports Are Reshaping Global Politics and Culture. But in Europe, at least, though, in terms of the soccer cups, etc., and the European Cup, the cup is awarded to the players and the captain, not the owners, whereas particularly in the NFL in America, the team owners seem to have a much, much more powerful and prominent role, as do owners in general. And it seems to me that that's more a comment on how America is so business-friendly.
I would be very careful with that. That's just a tradition. I could tell you how that arose. I mean, I'd be very careful. I would never go as far as an American owner having less power than Roman Abramovich or Silvio Berlusconi or the Mansour bin Zayed Al Nahyan, the Abu Dhabi owners of Manchester City. So be very careful. I mean, that just happens to, owners don't come right on the field to accept the cup, even though very quickly thereafter they're immediately interviewed. That's just a minor thing. I would not read any kind of major symbolic difference here. especially, you know, with the owners that exist also in Europe. And look, these sports teams, I mean, are probably one of the last bastions of sort of personalistic ownership, meaning they are run like corporations, but they're actually not corporations. They are really sort of personalistic fiefdoms. They are the playthings of rich people for whom this is an aspect of social capital. It's not money. Money doesn't, I mean, I know this is, of course, totally against everything that people say, but the New York Yankees or Manchester United are a piddly little corporation. They would not even come close to anything of the Fortune 500. Okay, that's not what their power is about. Their power is, in fact, about symbols, about culture. And that's why they are so coveted by the likes of Roman Abramovich or the Boss family or whomever, okay? Because, in fact, they convey a phenomenal form of recognition, prestige, all these other things which our societies value. But it's not for the money. You know, Mark Cuban doesn't, you know, it doesn't matter whether Dallas really makes, the Mavericks make a lot of money or don't make a lot of money. The last person to really have a sports team as his primary form of income and source of income in America was Calvin Griffith, who owned the Washington Senators and then moved them to Minnesota, and they became the Minnesota Twins. That was, you know, 50 years ago. Since then, all these owners have made billions in other things, or they have other interests, and then they have these. This is like a trophy. And that's not different from the premiership or from in the U.S., whether they go in for whether they are shown, the owners are literally shown with the trophy or not. I think that's really marginal. There are a little bit of differences in places like Germany and Spain, because these clubs are actually less, they're not owned by individuals, but by clubs, where you have the socios, the members, so it's a bit of a different model. Still, I just watched the Real Bayern game, and these are major entities that are all about symbolic and cultural and social capital, not financial capital.
But Andre Markovich, you just mentioned Mark Cuban, the owner of the Dallas Mavericks. Yesterday, he was defending Donald Sterling and saying this is an issue of free speech, and you know, people can say stupid things, but they shouldn't lose a team over an issue of free speech in a private conversation. He's now, of course, completely changed his tune since the press conference of the NBA commissioner Adam Silver. That seems to be out there in the one defender of the idea that this was a private conversation, which has been out there in the conservative press and defending Donald Sterling, was in fact the reporter from Fox News who asked that question. But Silver very quickly dismissed it by saying, well, it may have been a private conversation, but in our conversations with Sterling, he agreed that it was his voice and it was him that said it, and that's what he said. So end of matter.
No. It's nothing to do with free speech. I mean, he's not prosecuted. He can say anything he wants. But speech has consequences. It's not that he's not free to say anything he wants. He can say anything he wants. It's not his speech wasn't curtailed. It's what he said that has become, as I said before, socially unacceptable. Okay? I've just completed a book about how we have changed our ways of dealing with dogs and animals in general. It's about compassion. Okay, it would have not been odd or against the grain of the existing mores of the time. I don't know, 40, 50 years ago, for you to stand, somewhere in L.A. and kick a dog. This would have been fine. Try doing it today. Okay, it's not a question of it. Things have changed. Things have moved along. It's a question of demeanor, a question of probity, really, not about freedom of speech. He has every right to say anything he wants. It's just that it became public, and then it has consequences for not his personal freedom. He can do anything he wants, but in fact, it has consequences because he is in an entity where 75 or plus players are black. His employees are black, are African American, who take offense to this. So it's not. I don't think it's a free speech issue for me at all. It's just that there are certain markers that societies at some point actually, you know, see as you can't transgress against them. Whether, you know, and that's one of them. And clearly race is that in the United States, rightly so, given our history. And I don't see anything wrong with what happened here. He can watch the Clippers on television. He can do anything he wants. He can. And by the way, the issue about his potentially being forced to sell the team, cry me a river. Come on, he bought the team for whatever
$13 million.
It's valued now at $750 billion. I'm sorry, million. Excuse me, close to $1 billion. It's just, again, a form. It's a club. The NBA is a club. Clubs have rules. Any association, if you and I were to get together, we would establish certain written and unwritten rules. That's the way humans interact. And the NBA has a rule that, in fact, says that for whatever reason, above all, if you, in fact, violate and things by ill behaving that sheds bad, puts the association in a bad light, the association has certain rights to move against you. This is, any club would do this, okay? Any club, okay? And so the NBA just decided to, you know, he clearly put the NBA in a bad light, and I don't think anyone can argue that. And the NBA said, okay, you violated our club rules, we will take action against you. This is not a free speech issue. This is an issue that any association has, and he clearly violated those. Not only, certainly in spirit, I would actually even argue not only in spirit, but also in the letter.
Well, Andre Markowitz, you just mentioned that times have changed in this country, and of course that was the rationalization given by the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, John Roberts, when he eviscerated the Voting Rights Act and said that racism is finished in America. But if you've been following the news lately, just in the last week, you had the Clive and Bundy situation where he was hailed by the right-wing press as a hero until his poisonous racism poured out, and then everybody ran a mile from him. The Supreme Court struck down affirmative action on campuses, and of course,
campus.
Yeah, your campus, right?
Yeah,
the University of Michigan.
It's all about the University of Michigan.
Yeah. So
it's not about the campus. There are a number of cases. In this case, it was struck down the consequences of that, which in fact the Michigan voters then voted that it can be changed, the Michigan Constitution. But anyway, that's a whole. So what's your point?
The point I'm making is that the notion that we've changed has given conservatives cover by saying it's all over. And anybody that's paying attention to the real world, how can you say that after Donald Sterling, after Clive and Bundy, after the Supreme Court decisions on both voting rights and affirmative action, that racism is finished in this country?
Of course, I totally agree. But, I mean, you don't always respond to, you seem a bit obsessed by what the conservatives say or don't say.
Well, I'm with a liberal radio station. So.
Yeah, I understand that. But, I mean, it's you do what's right, you do what's important. I found this thing with this guy Bundy to go, I mean, just unbelievable. I mean, I do not understand how the federal government doesn't just, arrest the guy. I mean,
well, the reason they don't arrest him, Andre, is that he's got a bunch of armed guys with assault rifles ready to die for their right-wing beliefs.
Fine. I'm sorry. I mean, this is state power. I mean, you can't. If you and I were to behave like this, this wouldn't happen. Anyway, but that's a different story. I didn't say, or I certainly didn't intimate at all, that there is no racism. I just said that, in fact, in the discourse in sports, in hegemonic sports, baseball, basketball, hockey, the big four North American sports, certainly also soccer, which is not a major hegemonic sport yet in the United States, the discourse of racism has in fact been banned, okay? Meaning that to me, Adam Silver completely conformed to that. In other words, he basically said that we will not tolerate this, and I totally applaud that. There's end of story. I mean, this does not say that there is no racism. This does not say that race will not be the third rail in American politics. This does not mean that everything is honky-dory. Does not mean that a kid from central L.A. has the same chances as a kid from Beverly Hills, on and on and on. But, you know, different issue.
Well, Andrei Markovits, I thank you very much for joining us here today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Again, I'm speaking with Andrei Markovits, who's a professor of comparative politics at the University of Michigan. His books include Uncouth Nation, Why Europe Dislikes America, Offside, Soccer and American Exceptionalism, and Gaming the World, How Sports Are Reshaping Global Politics and Culture. His latest book is Sportista, Female Fandom in the United States. We're going to take a brief station break and be back with a further discussion on the public shaming of Donald Sterling.